Hello, hello. This is Kinnack coming back for the 10th anniversary Metroplexity podcast. The big 10 ended up being a little later than I intended. Had some exciting renovation in the house, which was planned, and some exciting renovations of my computer, which were not planned. So it ended up being delayed by a couple of days. Right now, we are actually staying with a friend for the next couple of months. So if anything about the podcast sounds weird, it's probably because I'm in a very different space. There is a different cat who is currently trying to crawl into my lap, and so on and so forth. So hopefully I will still be intelligible, if vague. But we've got some questions here. I guess before I dive into it, there were a couple things that came out since then, which might impact this. I mean, we did have a 10th anniversary Metroplex Day, which added a bunch of stuff, not all of which got discovered, but I suppose that won't necessarily surprise people too much with the track record. And also released the first of the downtown proper adventure locations, which is a cathedral. And I think that's been pretty cool. So a lot of stuff going on there, some which worked to varying extents when it went live. And so hopefully people will enjoy that. Do have some plans to roll out a bit more content there and then sort of, you know, expand to the rest of downtown, have a few more chunks before hitting Midgard Tower proper, but getting surprisingly close there. All right, well, first off, we've got some questions from CryptoDynamic. Hey, Kinnack, happy Metroplex Day. Happy Metroplex Day. You may have already started the podcast off of this, but any general thoughts on Metroplexity hitting its 10th anniversary? I did not expect for it to, last nearly this long. We've got a crew of people who are very interested in it. Sorry if you can hear that sneezing. That is, in fact, the cat that is trying to crawl into my lap. I'm not sick, just this kitten. Her name is Georgia. She's not one of the normal cats. The normal cats are upstairs. We have not, like, abandoned them in the house that's being renovated or anything like that. But the upstairs is quite noisy, so I figured it would be better to come down here, despite the fact that there's a sneezy kitty. So I wasn't really expecting it to last that long. We've got some pretty... made a lot of progress, a lot of really cool content. There's definitely still ways to go. And I did... I have, obviously, on more than one occasion had to... I don't want to say step back exactly, but take a bit of a breather for one reason or another. And can't promise that I won't do that again. In fact, I can probably promise that I will do that again, let's be honest. But, yeah, I think we're still trucking. And there's some cool stuff in our future. I would like to, at some point, wrap up the main quest line, because then there's other stuff, which is also cool, and I'm also excited about. So, it would not entirely surprise me if we're still here in another 10 years, but, you know, technology and the rate that it's changing wouldn't also entirely surprise me if some update came down the pipe and it was like, oh, by the way, you have to rewrite the entire code base or you're done, and that might slay me. But, yeah, for the time being, we're looking pretty good. Some other long-term stuff. Vaulted mysteries we've not yet managed to solve since the game started. Can you tell us anything about your favorite? There is... obviously, there's quite a bit of... quite a few references to Matsuo, the Demon Slayer. Shows up in a bunch of different places. There's a bit more to that than just, like, you know, callbacks to a cool show in the universe. And I think think people will be very pleased when they finally do find that. Do you have a favorite among the mysteries you managed to solve or mostly solve? I feel like, and this one just holds a special place in my heart, not because it was the most complicated or anything like that, but because it was so, so early and so interesting. In that, I still have a special place in my heart for the Mysterious Puzzle Box, and that getting sort of broken down and figured out. There's a lot of interesting stuff in there, and actually, I think a tiny bit still hasn't been figured out from a story perspective, at least. I guess there's a small mechanical thing that has some interesting story implications. I'm not sure if the small mechanical thing has been figured out. But there's there's some good stuff there, and nostalgic, you know. Of all the in-game events that have happened, are there any that particularly stand out for you? The early Halloweens before people really figured out that I was serious about just, like, kind of, you know, coding everything in and just letting it lie as far as what you guys decided were sort of special in that, you know, I could kind of, there was just a lot of, like, oh, yeah, there's no way that we can, oh, God, we can, oh, dear sweet God, what have we done? That's a pretty good feeling. now that you believe me, it's a little less, it's more of a shared experience and less of me gloating, the shared experience is nice, but I do hold a special place in my heart for gloating. Some of the more general Metroplex questions. Looks like we only managed to find 3 new things this Metroplex day and failed to trigger the finale, which means this year's trophy may be lost to the mist of times. Or at least it doesn't sound like anyone managed to trigger it. For items that are very specific to a specific event and won't be back in the future, so a way we could be able to see them, be able to record them on the wiki for posterity, maybe they could be added to your in-game collection. That's actually not a bad idea. There's a not small number of, for example, Halloween rewards that have never gotten handed out, stuff like that. For the most part, they're just, you know, quote, just items. They don't have, like, a lot of, you know, code sunk into them or anything like that. But, yeah, it might be good to drop some of those. Legion tracks have a special result when using one causes you to gain a point of will. Are there any other items or encounters that use a similar mechanism? Let me actually check out that. Item, because that went in a while ago. There are definitely a number of items that have secret, deeper triggers. I'm just trying to think of the exact mechanics behind that one. And by think of, I mean literally look up. Because it's item number, you know, 30 or something. It's been a while. Oh no, 249. Alright, let's see here. Man, this cat is just terrifying me. It's climbing up here and bumbling into things. Yeah, the mechanic where you get the special result where you gain will from Blind Legioning does actually show up in a number of places. Probably half a dozen or so. just to give you like a rough scale of that. So yeah, that exact mechanic does. And there's a couple of other places where there's, you know, various similar stuff. There's some things in the game, like getting Art Appreciation, Program Terror, the Mushroom Spade, that require doing something repeatedly without visible updates past the first step or two, until you've done enough. Are there many things we're missing that use a similar mechanic? Anything in unearthly items? Generally, I don't do a ton of stuff like that, but I mean, it is a really good place to hide things when, you know, I'm being a jerk, for that exact reason. There are definitely a few. I'm trying to think if there are any of the unearthly items. I don't think there's anything undiscovered in the unearthly items that does stuff like that, but I could pretty easily be wrong. Most of the time in the unearthly items, it's really like a combination of things. Wouldn't surprise me if there was something in the set from last year, the clipboard, the pants, and the watch. It's a watch. That might have something like that. Just because there's a lot of hidden counters and tracking in the back there, and it would not surprise me if one of them was like, oh yeah, and you get, you know, kind of. With the addition of eggs, flour, and dry rice, is some of the groundwork for the cooking system being laid down? Yes, it absolutely is. As more of the Zaibatsu store opens, one of the floors, I should say, in question, Home Electronics. So, once you can get up there and, you know, pay them an appropriate sum of money for a stove and oven, which, I mean, is not cheap, you would be able to, start cooking up a storm. Been the one since we asked about the good old charnel house. I somewhat recently noticed a message we hadn't gotten onto the wiki before, which made me wonder. The containment suit guard wanderground down there asks for help if we just walk away, and will believe we know the way out if we try to lure him to his doom. But if we actually sincerely offer to help, he doesn't believe us. Are we perhaps missing something, or is it just because he's mentally unstable? He is in pretty bad shape, as I recall. And may or may not, well, yeah, I guess his responses being illogical isn't terribly surprising. That would fit with the situation. Bunch of neat unearthly items with the but there is still quite a bit of stuff going on in the charnel house, both versions. More in the latter than in the former. That's still undiscovered. More by the latter, I mean the second charnel house has more undiscovered than the first charnel house, which makes sense, right? I'm sure. But wanted to be clear. There have been a bunch of neat unearthly items with multiple encounters, with the latest being the whole overarching dusty clipboard orbital watch wispy hospital pants story. Fun to poke around in, but with the hospital pants in particular, the nature of the encounters means you may spend a lot of energies to get the ones you're looking for. Any thoughts on the possibility of some future encounter-heavy unearthly items being self-contained area like the antique floor mirror? Yeah, absolutely. That's certainly a possibility. It just depends a lot on how much goes in there. There's sort of a... that requires a certain level of... I guess a certain density of content before it really makes sense to break it off like that. I never actually never really planned for the three of those to be... a separate area. But if they were all together, it certainly could have been. But, like, some of them, like the mining helmet, there isn't necessarily, like, there needs to, when something like that happens, there needs to be enough content to basically make it a full area, and it being its own area needs to make it more interesting. Like, not just, like, the same level of interesting, but actually more interesting, in my opinion. Because I would prefer, in general, obviously, like, there's, it's sort of a seesaw, right? Like, but I would lean towards having more that have effects when you're out and about, that's sort of integrated with the rest of the gameplay, rather than being siloed off and doing their own thing. Unless their own thing is very compelling and doesn't really work integrated with the rest. And I think the mirror does that. And it wouldn't surprise me if there were more items that worked like that. That said, there are some tricky things with that set of items that may help you get through the whole series in one day. Because I knew energy was going to be a little tight for that one. With Halloween coming up, I'm wondering what the status of some of our long-running NPCs. I think last we ran into her, Emily was working for Midgard and putting her vampire mind powers to use for them. Chuck may or may not have been turned into a pelt. And the last time we saw Janet, she was already working to contain the situation in Halloween 2015, so there was no opportunity to chat. I think we'll end up seeing some follow-ups to these characters in the next couple of years. Janet has offered some interesting bits of lore, so it's always great to be able to talk to her. I would not be surprised if some of those folks showed up this year. It is, I mean, you are downtown now, so it's pretty easy for Midgard folks to pop their heads in. So we'll see exactly who the cast of characters is. Getting art requests over to Puyo for that actually pretty shortly. This is just exciting, so I'm going to talk about it. It's going to be, there's sort of a narrow window for the October art this year, so I guess in advance I apologize if anything, you know, goes terribly wrong. But the reasons for there being a narrow window is really cool, because she's actually taking a test to get her U.S. citizenship later this month, and then in the early part of October, a really good friend of hers from Japan is coming over for a week and a half, and then some of our other friends are getting married. So she's busy on a lot of different fronts, and they sort of have to thread it perfectly between citizenship and a friend coming into town. So hopefully we will get plenty of amazing art. I have faith in Puyo. Actually, really, the most likely thing that will happen is that I will totally forget something, and she won't be able to go back and do it for me, because she's busy with other stuff, which she has obviously warned me in advance of. So if there's, like, you know, a stick figure for one of the enemies, that's why. it's all me at that point. Some non-mixture complexity questions. Have you ever played either of the La Mulana games? Think so. They seem to have an approach to in-game mysteries that's in line with your style, often crypt kids to puzzles, or having to gather information across multiple areas to figure out a clue. La Mulana 2 also had its own interpretation of Norse mythology, which may be leaving me with a grudge against Jormungandr and Radatrosk. There's some... Norse mythology is kind of a beautiful thing. I'm glad that there's... I've always been, I don't want to say always, so many years ago when Smalllanden was very into second edition D&D, this would have been 90s, I guess, like early 90s, so I'd have been like maybe not even in my teens yet, but like teen, tween sort of area. And I got a copy of Legends and Lore, which was a second edition hardcover that covered a bunch of different mythologies and had stats for them to use them as gods in your D&D games, and like the heroes to use as NPCs. And then like a couple of like weird various like public domain properties, which was also kind of strange, like Lankmar, which I'm not even pronouncing correctly. I think I really was mostly introduced to Norse mythology there. Maybe technically I'd run into Thor in Marvel Comics before that, but that was where I was really introduced to it, and I was like, oh, hey, like, A, like, they're just kind of cool, and B, sort of the, that's, like, where, you know, my bloodline comes from, so to speak, from the sort of, you know, generically, you know, sort of Germanic area. And, so I end up reading up on it about devouring, and this was before, like, useful internet. This was back in, like, dial-up and Alta Vista days. Got all sorts of books out of the library and read up on all sorts of stuff. And the thing that I think actually ended up with me digging into it the most is a discussion I was tracking down a weird conversation I had with one of my German teachers in class about how in German the word for Wednesday is Mittwoch, which is middle of the week, which is a totally legitimate name for Wednesday. He had dropped a mention that it was Mittwoch now rather than Wotanstag, so Odin's Day, because of basically Christianity coming through, and how, like, that was the day they decided to change, like, not Thor, not Freya, just Odin. I dug into a bunch more into that sort of interaction, and there was a whole lot of stuff about, like, Christian missionaries trying to sort of appropriate, basically, Odin as a Christ figure. And that was all really interesting. There's a lot of really just, like, straight-up interesting, like, regardless of religion or mythology or whatever, some interesting historical stuff that's happening there. But as I was reading through it, I was like, wow, this is, like, just like, all of these arguments these missionaries are making Odin look way better. Like, I'm not, at the time, I mean, it's just sort of like, oh, yeah, he's this god of, like, war and knowledge and stuff. Like, not really my scene. But, like, by the end of it, after reading all of their arguments, I was sort of like, wow, they, like, this guy is way cooler than the guy that they're arguing for. So that sort of it was a solid midpoint, at least, in my lifelong enjoyment of Norse mythology. So, yeah, I've dug into it a number of times. And being of sort of generally German descent, I feel less creepy about using it as a sort of villain group, right? As I'm sure the folks working on the game that you're talking about probably have sort of a similar situation where it's like, well, I would feel really weird having, like a aboriginal, like, dream time villain group, despite the fact that it would be rad as hell. I would just feel awkward about it, and the art could be so good. Whereas I can be like, oh yeah, like, if I screw up, which I inevitably will, I can just sort of, soak it, basically, the benefits of being a member of that group, and therefore being able to sort of be like, yeah, so there are some pretty awful things about, you know, that German and Germanic folks have done over the years, so shining a bit of a spotlight on some of those traits, even in a very adjacent way, is not the worst thing. Anyway, any interesting table stuff going on to talk about? I ask because I just got back into it myself, starting on a 5e Curse of Strahd campaign for some friends. Oh, yay! Well, we are running a Pathfinder 2 playtest group that's getting launched probably next year at Gen Con, but everybody's playtesting now so they can work out the kinks. Very different game than Pathfinder 1. I think, I mean, obviously it's beta, like it still needs some work. That's how betas go, as all of you know. And the, but yeah, it's, I think, going in a much better direction. It's sort of interesting, the original Pathfinder playtest was a much smaller change. Like, it was basically, people joke about it being D&D 3.75, but yeah, it was basically, D&D 3.5 had been out for a number of years, then Pathfinder came, and it was basically like, we're basically D&D 3.5, with like a couple fixes here and there, and still actually in print. So that was a relatively easy playtest. But the there were a lot of changes that they were going to make that sort of got walked back that I actually really preferred. So right now there are a lot of changes that I like, and I'm kind of curious to see what the fans will be willing to put up with. So that's the interesting thing for in Pathfinder world. For Starfinder, also by Paizo. It's their, like, it's kind of a little bit in the same vein of Metroplexity in a weird way, in that it's very much like a science fantasy. Like, we're sort of a cyberpunk fantasy, and they're very much like sci-fi space opera fantasy. But there are some books, like, they just launched their armory, which is, like, their giant book of equipment. And Liz, with a bit of help from me, but a lot of Liz, did basically the entire weapons chapter for that, which is, like, probably half the book. That's actually not fair. I don't know exactly page count-wise, but it's a lot of weapons, like, hundreds and hundreds of weapons. So any science fantasy weapon you might want probably has stats in there, thanks to Liz. And working on a bunch of other products that will also have, some of which will have her names on the cover, which is pretty cool. And she's, actually, if you even look in the Pathfinder playtest rulebook, which you can totally download from Paizo, it's like the PDF version is free if you wanted to print it out. Obviously that costs money, but she's actually credited as a developer in there too, because she sort of went above and beyond her editing duties. So yeah, there's a lot of that going on. I've got a Curse of the Crimson Throne campaign, which is Pathfinder set in, it's actually kind of Metroplexity in a different way. It's set in a city that is undergoing some pretty rapid social change and very likely some sort of revolution in their future. And Strange Aeons, which is Metroplexity in a totally different way, which is very much like basically, you wake up without any memory in an asylum and just sort of figure out what's going on from there and deal with Cthulhu Mythos stuff. Those two are the main campaigns that I'm running. And then the Pathfinder playtest stuff, which will only be going on for a couple months. And then Liz is running a Starfinder game and a Hell's Rebels game, Starfinder's Dead Sons is the only adventure path they've released for it so far. And she's running Hell's Rebels, which is also kind of like City with unrest and badness, but with a much stronger theme of devils. So, hence the hell. So yeah, lots of Pathfinder going on, a little bit of Starfinder. Ran some of each at Gen Con for the specials, which was fun. So yeah, lots of gaming, lots of diving a little bit more back into board games. I've been trying my hand a touch at board game design. We'll see if that gets anywhere interesting. It's mostly the equivalent of the notebooks I was filling up as a kid. It's just now they're in the cloud. Thanks for all the years of fun. You are very welcome. Some questions from Al. Happy Metroplexiversity. You're going to manage another 10 years. Thank you. If you were transported into Metroplexity, which survivor would you side with? Wow. That's a really good question. Let's see. Hell scares me. Alder, he's a pretty good dude. Dr. Emerson is probably Dr. Emerson. Although, to be entirely fair, I might just stick with Low because, once I meet someone, I prefer not to branch out too much, not with, like, social situations. What are salvaging tools exactly? Just sort of a sack of tools to pry things apart, basically. I mean, sort of like, think a reverse sewing kit, and you're not too far wrong. If you had, like, a pair of pliers and a seam ripper and some little screwdrivers and stuff like that. That's the sort of stuff I'd expect to see in that, but very much like an ad hoc itself kind of salvaged bag of gear. Does reactive defense ever apply outside of combat? I don't think so. It totally should, don't get me wrong. But let me just write that down, actually. Does your perception, reflexes, strength, or will ever help you in hacking? Not in the same sort of hard-coded way that it does in normal combat, but there are definitely a couple places where it does come up. How do you design opponent's chains? Are those all manually coded? Yeah, they're not auto-generated. I basically just longhand them and then copy them over, which is how sometimes there'll just be like a technique that's totally in like the wrong space, or like I'll have fat-fingered something. Judging by ID numbers, there are over 2,700 technique forms now, which is an insane amount. How do you keep track of those all? You've probably seen this due to various bugs a couple of times, but all of them have names associated with them, and so it'll be like, I'll have, a base technique, which is, let's say, punch really hard, right? And then there'll be a version of it for, like, that it branches down onto, and then that one will be named, punch really hard, and then, like, higher strength in parentheses, like, punch very hard, like with knuckles, right? Or with knuckles and higher strength, so that I can keep track of them. So there isn't like an interface that they tree out like that. But if I didn't have a relatively cogent naming scheme, it would have just utterly fallen apart by now. Have you written yourself any tools to make implementing Metroplexity easier? Not really a lot. There's sort of an old truism in design that in software design, the software designer's tools are the worst tools. Just sort of the way of things. And I think that probably holds true here. I have a couple of like diagnostic things that I do run. But there's a lot of things that like, it's like, I should probably have a tool for this, but I do it like once a month and it takes me like 10 minutes, whatever. As opposed to, you know, writing a tool will take me like 20 minutes a month and then, you know, save it. It'll save me a bunch of time over the years. But, so yeah, there's definitely some efficiencies that could exist there. If I had more of a like, if I had more of like a, you know, a crew, if I had folks that were like, if I had like story person, and like a technique development person and whatever, like I would probably develop tools for them. But since it's really just me, that hasn't been necessary. Have any new etheric techniques been given Blood of the Ancients updates? It's a little weird how only techniques under ID 800 are affected by it, or we are just really sloppy about testing it, which I'm sure we are. I really like the Blood of the Ancients idea. I wish it were not unearthly or could be reintroduced on a new unearthly item as an excuse to update it. I believe so. It's entirely possible that some of them have legitimately been missed. But what I try to do is for not all etheric techniques are supposed to have it. It's sort of a like ones that are both ones that I guess aren't aligned with another power source, if that makes sense. So like if you have another unearthly item, you're using it with an etheric technique that generally won't have a Blood of the Ancients version. Or if you have a one that's very specifically tied into a different mythos, I guess you could say, than what's going on with Blood of the Ancients. So part of that, I'm pretty sure, is the ones that it applies to becoming a bit sparser, but it's entirely possible I missed some too, or you guys missed some. I always kind of planned, even when I was first releasing Puzzle Box, that I would go back and create some other ways to get Blood of the Ancients buffs. And it's relatively easy to do as far as like adding another buff that does the same thing, just because of how I coded it, because I was planning to do that in the back end. So it wouldn't really surprise me to see something like that show up on another unearthly item. The intent was always kind of to keep it on the unearthly side of things, though, so it would surprise me a little bit to get it earthlied. The only known techniques that prevent running away are NPC only, so are there any PC techniques that can hold opponents, and have you ever thought about any opponents that attempt to run away? I've actually really thought about opponents running away quite a bit, because there are a number of opponents that really should just bail. And that's a question of just basically needing to code it and then going back through and applying it to a bunch of old enemies. Because there are a ton of enemies that really don't want to be in fights with you. And at that point, techniques that prevent fleeing could definitely do a lot. And just in general, having some sort of morale system, such as it is, adds a lot to the enemies. Makes their AI a lot more interesting and seeming a lot more like real and human. So yeah, it's definitely something that I've thought about quite a bit. I don't believe there's code in there to hold opponents in exactly the same way. Because right now, the way that the enemy techniques that hold you are coded, it's coded as basically like, who is holding you? So it would have to be a new set of code to hold opponents. But there's a couple of techniques that I could very easily see applying that to, like, you know, stuff with tentacles, like you do. I've been digging into opponents' flags lately. Any hint of the following? Dynamite immunity seems to trigger on some, but not all puzzle bosses, flying creatures, and other one-offs like the Spear Woman or Pile of Secrets. A specific flag or something more general that I can investigate? There is a tricky... there's a tricky bit of code that is really kind of hacky in how that works that I'm not, like, suddenly super happy with. And I feel like there's probably a better way to implement Dynamite than how it works right now. At the moment, it's keyed into something that is sort of is what it breaks on the back end. So it's basically if it would screw with something on the back end, it doesn't work, which is a really, like I said, hacky way to do that, kludgy, if you prefer. So that's one of those things that might very easily get changed in the future. With something to have it work a little bit more in line with normal techniques, like maybe just having it go off at 6, right, rather than at the actual ending round, something like the 6th spot. But that means that if you get killed, the dynamite doesn't go off, which can affect things like PvP. So there's some stuff that has to go on there. The Taking Eclipse Fags makes a lot of sense for human opponents, but some etheric opponents also trigger that, like the Painted Woman, Force Beast, Winged Hunter, and Skull and Flames. Why do etheric creatures trigger it, but not your random ghouls or specters? So there are a couple of different flags that may not be applied entirely correctly, because I split them up at one point. Let me check out, like, say, Winged Hunter here real quick. Oh, yep. Yep, it's doing a dumb thing. Great. So yeah, there's two separate flags. One of them is, this person is taking Eclipse, and the other one is that this doesn't really need to be taking Eclipse, if that makes sense. So you gave a pile of examples there that I'm actually going to go fix right now. If you run into any more of these, just let me know, and I will I'll also do the same to them. It's kind of funny. A bunch of them actually have both of the flags. Like, this is taking Eclipse and doesn't need Eclipse because, like I said, I just added it later to actually fix the exact sort of thing that you're talking about there. So there we go. So this should be good then. Eating opponents trigger somewhere on a 0 to 2 scale of evil morality. Eating humans seems more evil than eating other creatures, but how do you distinguish eating lace servants as more evil than eating giant maggots? Is there a specific opponent flag there? I mean, seems like there should be a specific... Okay. I see your question. So sometimes you're getting very low evil, and sometimes you're getting more meaningful evil. It's like, I'm pretty sure eating humans is considered worse. Like, I'm I think cannibalism is sort of funny, but not, like, to the extent that I would just be like, oh, yeah, no, it's fine. It's fine. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, there's a weird weird thing in how the actually take that back. Sorry, I'm staring at this trying to decide if it's a problem or not. So yeah, there's a some of them. Yeah, no, I'm actually comfortable with how that's working. There's some extra stuff going on with the fish thing, which I think will eventually make sense. General, most stuff there should be zero, and I feel like maybe even the grubs should be zero, but you're seeing an interesting thing in the fish case. All right, some questions from Argus. Happy 10th anniversary, Metroplex, and us players and the admin, of course. Yes, happy anniversary to all. What is something current you would tell you of 10 years ago? Well, I mean, like, in a Metroplex-y sense, I would probably just tell myself to keep on going, because people are going to be interested in 10 years. And you're not, like, wasting your time. Which is a pretty good feeling. As far as, like, life and stuff, I mean, probably, you know, when to invest in Bitcoin, you know, stuff like that. What do you consider the biggest changes in Metroplex? Well, there's certainly been a number of rounds of getting, like, deeper interactions and more options. Like, if you look back at the original version of the Southside quest, there's not really a lot going on there, and that's gotten buffed up, and like the future ones that came out are like very, very like densely interconnected. I think that's the biggest change. It becoming, I mean, Metroplex is sort of becoming more itself, if that makes sense. The best changes, I would actually say probably the same thing there, because hopefully I wouldn't put that much work into it if it wasn't good, but just in general, that's something that I'm always very excited about with Metroplex, and something that when people point out, I want to, like, dive in and add stuff and fix stuff and so forth. What are some things that we, player base and content creator, can do to make it better? One of the, if you can hear that purring, that's the cat again. One of the things that I have been thinking about some more often is having some a more official round table-y type stuff of some relatively small number of players who don't mind getting a fair amount of spoilers for not like big story stuff, but like, hey, like, I'm totally going to be putting in food, right? Like, not a spoiler. Is there anything super obvious I should consider as far as like what types of food we're looking at, things like that? Or like, hey, you're going to be breaking into the Midgard Tower, what sort of what sort of techniques do you want to have available? Like, you know, obviously, like, you're going to be able to, you know, kill a bunch of people and take their clothes and disguise yourself to get in, because that's just a thing that that works in Metroplex. But, like, you know, what other sorts of options do you want to have in there? What sort of NPCs do you want to see more of? Just like, and I guess, not even necessarily, and I'm not sure exactly what form this would take, whether that would be like the round table thing like I was talking before, which is a little bit of how we do it in Twilight Heroes. There's sort of like a dev team there that we just chat about those things. But, or just like, open threads, and I might end up trying a couple of things and seeing what happens. But a little more, there's some stuff that I think the game would be, that I would be doing people a disservice by sharing it, but with, like, you know, oh, how do you think, you know, the best way to clue you into the, like, the big mysteries of the setting? Obviously not something that I'm interested in doing, or hopefully folks are interested in me doing, because that's not going to happen. But, like, you know, more just like, hey, making sure that, like, everybody's on the same page and we have, you know, good ideas and whatnot. Because many heads is better than just one. So that might be something that we can do a little bit more of. I had some luck with Tribe Heroes too, of doing little contests, like, you know, well, the most recent one we did for Tribe Heroes was come up with a new enemy, which is a lot less work for Tribe Heroes than it is for Metroplexity, but I guess depending on what sort of techniques the enemy has, right? Like, come up with a new enemy, and, like, if it's, you know, good and fits in the game, it'll go in the game and start showing up. Oh, and then everybody got, you know, prizes, which were not, like, you know, unearthly coin equivalents or anything. It was just, like, you know, like, hey, congratulations, you're a creative person. Have this special creative people-only item sort of thing. It's not, like, gameplay. It's just, like, you know, like a ribbon, right? I think there's a certain extent where, I mean, it's been 10 years. Like, yes, this Metroplexity is really kind of, you know, my baby, but, like, it's really kind of, you know, it takes a village, right? Like, it's kind of all of our babies at this point, all of our baby. I guess expect to see me soliciting a little bit more stuff from you guys, and we'll see exactly how that goes and what form that ends up taking. Whether that ends up being, like, just threads on the forum or some sort of, like, little group, or if there have been a couple suggestions from people to switch over to Patreon instead of doing the unearthly items, because obviously those have been extremely erratic. And that might be, you know, an interesting Patreon thing. Things to think about. Gameplay-wise, way back when, there was some talk about a pet system and a cooking system. Of course, they're still under construction dorms. What would you say the hardest part of creating that kind of content? It's basically all really just, like, time and energy. I guess sometimes it's time and energy, sometimes it's, sometimes it's that it's waiting for the right, right place in the schedule, if that makes sense. Like, I mean, the pet system's just never really been, like, a priority. But, like, cooking has actually been waiting for Downtown to come out, because that's where I wanted to put cooking. So it's still, it's, I'm not going to say it's on time. It's in the right place in the schedule. There's a couple of things that have been extremely, extremely delayed, which thankfully I haven't, like, promised anyone out loud, or you would probably be angry with me. But they're hopeful. They will eventually exist, and I think people will be excited about it. But yeah, so those are, it's always just a question of like, okay, like I could, you know, knock out, you know, the other half of the cathedral, or I could, lay like the groundwork for pets and put in like one or two pets. And especially when you've got, like the last bits, I've been, like, when updates are kind of sparse, I don't want to be... I want to be pushing forward the main plot line more. So, like, when I'm on, like, 4 updates a month, it's like, oh, yeah, let's throw one of those at pets. Absolutely. When I'm on, like, an update every 4 months, definitely not pets. So there's been a couple of factors there. But I don't think any of it's actually, like, hard exactly, except in the sense that, like, everything is hard when you're dealing with, you know, anxiety or and depression and stuff like that. But some of the, occasionally you'll just sort of realize that the idea that you had wasn't actually like that great. So like the dorms are kind of like waiting for a good idea. And like if I needed to fill them in, like if there was, you know, you needed to go through the dorms to get to the next big quest, that could be done. But because it's always been sort of a side thing, I'm not too worried about it yet. Has 5 years influenced your ideas here? Feel like it has particularly. Like, my ideas have definitely, and my design styles have definitely grown and changed over time. Cursed me. I plugged a bunch of Liz's stuff when I was talking about RPGs earlier. There's actually some stuff that I've been working on, too. I've got some books that have come out on, by books, I mean PDFs, that have kind of under the Shadows Over Gothic line imprint, I guess you could say, which is a sort of gothic survival Lovecraftian horror setting. So basically all your horrors, all of them, with some really interesting and potentially problematic, if not handled correctly, tones of colonialism and like culture clash and stuff like that underlying the whole thing. And I've been working on that. There's not a ton of that stuff out yet, but there are I think 3 PDFs with me on the byline, maybe more, and a number that I've developed. And then I've also been doing conversions for Starfinder versions of Legendary Planet Adventure Path. And I'm just wrapping up one of those now. So yeah, and then those are mostly with the Vothic stuff is all just me on my lonesome because Liz isn't a big horror fan. But the Legendary Planet stuff is Liz and I collaborating because it's really easy to convert things to Starfinder. So yeah, if you're like, what else does Kinect do sometimes? Those are sort of answers. For what it's worth, and I doubt any of you are like, oh God, why is he working on other stuff? Because we've had this conversation a bunch of times. But it definitely has... It's really funny to just sort of like graph like mental health versus productivity. Because it'll be like... like bad mental health, just like don't get anything done on any of my projects. It's like good mental health, get like, you know, get something done for Legendary Planet, get, like, this cathedral stuff out, get podcasts out, get Donation I'm Done for Twilight Heroes, get a book out for Apothic, and blog posts for them, all this other stuff, write an entire article that's going to be released in quite a while. And it's like, when I'm working, like, they don't really, when it works, when it being my brain works, like, nothing is really conflicting with each other. Although I will say I am pretty much capped out. I don't, if I take on another, like, big project, I'll probably have to drop something. Like, I'm actually starting to hit the time thing that everybody talks about. And so it'll be like, that'll be my, you know, work week, right? Like, I will be able to fill up work week with all these different tasks and have, like, sort of the energy and focus to do each of them. And, like, if I cut out one of them, I just end up, you know, watching YouTube or whatever, arguing with people on Reddit. But unlike a bad week, like, just none of them get any progress done. And it's interesting to watch that. And as you can tell, there have been a lot of bad weeks, which is not, like, not something I'm trying to put on you guys, but just an interesting observation. What are some events you would have liked to have seen that got complicated by us players? There was a Halloween where there was a event that there was, like, a break point between, I guess I'm not going to say good and bad, but, like, two very different kinds of, like, badness, where basically the break point was 30. And, it was really down to the wire. Like, it was on, the day leading up to Halloween, it's in, like, 24, 25. And, like, it's the thing that it was asking to do is pretty hard. But it, like, sort of creeped me up through the day and stopped at 29. And I was, I don't necessarily, I didn't want everything to go terrible. But that was sort of a nail biter, right? It's sort of like, holy shit, like, what's going to happen? And, like, nobody else is, like, here to, you know, sort of be like, oh, God, yeah, what's going to happen? Everybody's like, oh, well, we'll just sort of do this thing and see if, like, the stuff happens or not. Because there's no, like, blinking red signs, like, no, literally one more. Which I guess might be a feature next year, who knows. Could it be the calendar of some sort on the com? Well, most of us know all the big holidays. It's not always obvious something is coming. That's an interesting question. I will think about that. And of course, thanks for putting in all of the time and effort into the game. I hope we make it enjoyable for you as well. I do really enjoy it. And it's one of the things that I really, I mean, obviously, like, I've stuck with it for 10 years through, I mean, thick and thin and relatively good mental health to relatively bad mental health. It's been very rewarding. And something that I still intend to continue doing for a while. Like I said, might very easily be another 10 years. We'll see. So there's a couple of things that I've scratched down to, for little note updates. Like I mentioned, Cathedral, second half of it, should be going in. I think people will find that also interesting. There's some good stuff going on there. The Cooking will be going in at some point. That's just sort of like, I have the art and stuff. I just need to code. Well, I need to decide exactly how I want cooking to work and code it. I might have a bit of a conversation with everyone before then. We'll see how that goes. There is, at some point before Halloween, probably, there are some pretty major software updates that I have to do. Which is sort of why I was talking about the, if there's a major update at some point, I need to recode, like, absolutely everything. That is not where we're at now, but it's sort of as close as it's gotten in the last 10 years. There's some, I need to change quite a bit of code, and by quite a bit, I mean, like, maybe. it's like a few dozen lines, if I'm lucky. Many, many more than that if I'm not. And it'll be one of those things where I will sort of flip the switch and some stuff will break and I'll just have to kind of put out fires from then. So that's obviously not something that I've been super looking forward to doing, but that's going to happen at some point. And obviously I'll give you a bit of warning there before I jump in with that. And then obviously that'll, between the three of those, I will be very happy if we get those three things taken care of and then move into Halloween. There might be a couple of small updates in there too. There's a couple of I've been sort of hoarding art for a couple of small updates, so I might be able to get out some of the old-fashioned weapon-type updates or get out some of the stuff we were talking about during the podcast, like enemies running away. There's some new PvP rewards that I've been wanting to put in, stuff like that. So it's sort of a grab bag. It's 10 years. I'm still feeling pretty good. So hopefully I will see you all tomorrow, and we're all very lucky. I'll see you all in another 10 years. Have a good one. I will catch you next podcast.